Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Laurel Elder, our panelist from the panel, is with us for Extra Innings, and we're talking about her brand new book called Not Going Back: Public Opinion on Abortion in Post-Dobbs America. For decades, Americans' view on abortion remained surprisingly consistent, even amid fierce political battles. But obviously, the 2022 Dobbs decision sparked a major shift. In the new book, Not Going Back, Laurel and her co-authors trace changing public attitudes on abortion from Roe v. Wade through the 2024 election and into 2025, examining how debates over access, regulation, and government involvement continue to reshape American politics. Drawing on national data and personal experience, the book explores why opinions have changed and what those changes may mean for future elections and policy fights and the country's political divide. Co-author Laurel Elder is a political scientist whose work focuses on gender, public opinion, and American politics. Hello again.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here once again.
It's wonderful to have you here and to have you talk about this very important book. What was the impetus? I mean, obviously the decision, but to want to say, let's look at the data and see what's happening here, right under our noses.
Yeah, there's a couple factors. One is this is obviously a book about public opinion on abortion in post-Dobbs America. That's the subtitle of the book. But I think it's about even more than that. I think it's really about our democracy and, you know, the idea. Basic idea is that, you know, public policy should reflect to some degree the views of the public. And so this book really grapples with what happens when public opinion and public policy diverge on an issue that is very high profile and also one that millions of Americans experience personally and think about deeply. So I see it even broader than that. But the other thing that really, you know, we started research, the three of us, my two co-authors and I, have spent our careers studying public opinion and many times looking at public opinion on issues relating to gender. And so we started researching public opinion on abortion years and years before the Dobbs decision was even in the works. And one of the reasons why we found this issue so interesting to focus on is, one, almost all Americans have an opinion on the issue of abortion that they're willing to share. And that may sound kind of obvious, but there's lots of pressing issues in our society, you know, from what should we do in terms of military action in Iran to, like, how should we reform Social Security? What's the best tax policy? That, you know, when you ask Americans, they'll be like, I don't know. I haven't thought that much about it. Not sure. But on abortion, people have attitudes that they're willing to share. So it's a fundamental issue to most people that they have thought deeply about. And as you also pointed out in the introduction, it's also an issue on which there has been very little change at the aggregate level for a half century. For 50 years, we saw Americans have pretty much the same attitudes on this issue in the aggregate.
So why, and obviously change brings change, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so when you say that it goes away, Roe v. Wade goes away, that's obviously, in many quarters, going to change opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, it did change opinion. And it changed opinion on abortion, I would say, in three broad ways. At the most basic level, it did shift public opinion in a more liberal direction on legal access to abortion. And I should just start this by saying, when I say attitudes about abortion have been consistent and that most people have an attitude, it doesn't have an opinion on abortion, it doesn't mean these attitudes are simple. I know we use the terms pro-life and pro-choice. I use those terms. They are handy shorthands, but that really does not capture the complexity of Americans' attitudes about abortion, which tend to be quite complex. Some political scientists have used the word situationalist, that most Americans support abortion in some situations and not others. And prior to Dobbs, what we saw was there was not that many, under 15% of people really supported no abortion in any circumstances. And not that many people supported, you know, no regulation, like abortion without any kind of government regulation. But what's happened since Dobbs is that the public has shifted to the left on this issue. And those who have shifted have been people who are sort of open to the idea of legal access to abortion being provided. And they've what they've done is become even more liberal on abortion. So Democrats, women, liberals have shifted further to the left. And what we see, one of the biggest changes, is that way more people now say government should stay out of this issue altogether. Like women should be, or, you know, people should be allowed to have access, legal access to abortion for any reason without government regulation.
So meanwhile, you have a good 2 years for this, for these opinions to firm up from 2022 to 2024 to the election. And it would, so I'm interested in what that public opinion then comes and how it shows itself within voting.
Yeah.
And as a obvious, I mean, it was fairly obvious that Kamala Harris talked, your title of your book comes from what she said, right?
Yes.
But, you know, we're not going back.
Yes.
To Donald Trump, who says, you know, who said, look, I'm the one who is responsible for making it go away.
Yeah. So I would say that abortion remains it's a really important issue. It is not the only issue. And it's, you know, in terms of how people vote, you know, partisanship, whether they see themselves as Democrats or Republicans, very powerful force in American politics. The economy is a very powerful force. But I still think abortion is a very potent issue in American politics. It is not often on the front pages, although it has been recently because of the decision, you know, the case coming out of Louisiana that the Supreme Court recently ruled about in terms of medication abortion. But I would say Donald Trump, I mean, so many of the headlines are generated by what Donald Trump does and says. And Donald Trump does not want to talk about the issue of abortion because I think he knows that it is not an issue that, since Dobbs, it works to the advantage of Republicans. Because in addition to the switch in the direction of opinion, what we've also seen, and this is really important, is a complete flip-flop in terms of who prioritizes the issue of abortion. For half a decade, it was people who said they were pro-life and who wanted to restrict access to abortion, who consistently said, this is a super important issue. I'm going to vote based on this issue. This issue mobilizes me to vote. And in the wake of Dobbs, what we see is that has completely shifted. And it's now people who are pro-choice and Democrats who are saying the issue of abortion is incredibly important to them, motivating them to go out to vote, and that they will vote based on this issue. And I would guess the third thing I would say in terms of how it's sort of shaped the landscape and voting that we looked at in this book is that now, as a result of Dobbs, you really have sort of a complete realignment on the Democratic side, whereas to be a Democrat in contemporary society today is to support legal access to abortion. There are very few Democrats in elected office and in the electorate who will say, I am pro-life. I'm opposed to legal access to abortion. That wasn't always the case. There used to be quite a number of, you know, in fact, it's not till the late 1980s that Democrats became more pro-choice of a party than Republicans. But today you have a very unified Democratic Party. So there's a lot of issues out there that divide the Democratic Party, where they don't have internal unity. But the issue of legal access to abortion is something that the party is, you know, very much unified around. On the Republican side, though, what our research shows is that depending on how you measure it or ask the question, anywhere between 30 and 50% of Republicans are what we'd call cross-pressured, meaning they have views on the issue of abortion that are in tension with the stated position of their party, like in their platform, which is pro-life, which is abortion is wrong, and we're opposed to legal access for abortion. And it was one thing to be a Republican prior to Dobbs and to be voting for candidates who are pro-life, even if you personally were pro-choice, because you knew the protections of Dobbs were there. But in the wake of Dobbs, it's a whole different scenario now. So what we looked at these cross-pressured Republicans, like, what are they going to do now? And what we found is they are more likely to have low interest in voting, to be less likely to say that they are enthusiastic about voting, have lower voter turnout, and are slightly more likely to defect to the Democratic Party. So this is a, you know, this has now become a very fraught issue for the Republican Party, because a large chunk of their voters are cross-pressured on this issue, and the issue actually demobilizes them.
All right, so let's take a quick break. I have many questions to follow up on, including things that have just happened in recent days that I want to talk to you about as well, that plays into all of this. Laurel Elder is our guest, co-author of the new book, Not Going Back, Public Opinion on Abortion in Post-Dobbs America. The book is published by Temple University Press. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Support for WMT comes from Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, offering custom framing and local art in the Capital Region Monday through Saturday, 10 to 7, Sunday, noon to 5, 518-915-1956. Audubon Service, Route 7, Sheffield, Massachusetts, providing service, repair, and diagnosis of modern European imports, specializing in Volkswagen, Audi, Mercedes, Land Rover, Porsche, and BMW, audubontechnic.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. A reminder, we are in lockbox mode, and we're going to hear more from David and Maddie coming up at 11:30 this morning in Lockbox Central to talk about the importance of helping the lockbox during this time. You can do it now at WAMC.org, and they'll be making their pitch again at 11:30 this morning. Laurel Elder joins us, author of the new book, co-author of the new book, Not Going Back, Public Opinion on Abortion in Post-Dobbs America. So just over the weekend, there was an event called Rededicate 250, a national jubilee of prayer, praise, and thanksgiving. And this was a march on the wall, on the mall, excuse me. And Trump administration officials were there, and they were speaking out. This is a White House backed group, and it was so abortion was part of it from what I saw and what I tuned into, but it was almost in the subtext, like it was not front and center. It was much more about blurring a church-state separation, which of course includes that issue, but was not the times that word was actually said. Abortion was quite limited, and I found that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I do think I sort of mentioned this before, but the Trump administration is not eager to engage with this issue of abortion. And a lot of pro-life organizations are actually very frustrated with the Trump organization for not pushing more, doing more. Even with this most recent case that went to the Supreme Court about abortion medication, which has become the most common way that people get abortions.
Well, that was the second thing I was going to talk about.
Yeah. Well, right. Yes, yes. But I do think that there is this real reluctance to talk about. I think Donald Trump thinks I put judges on the Supreme Court. They overturned Roe. I'm a hero to the pro-life movement, and now I'm done with this issue.
So as the court maintains mail access for the abortion pill and sets aside a lower court ruling that looked to restrict its availability, that decision now allows women to continue to obtain the drug through telehealth appointments and mail order services. But also, the litigation is ongoing regarding FDA regulations, and all of that is going to unfold. Does any of the information that you have, or any of the information that we see in this book, give us an idea? Because I find even the decision surprising, considering where we were in 2022.
The decision to allow the drug to continue. I mean, it is like a short-term victory for those who want access to abortion services. But I think it is just a, you know, I don't think it's any kind of permanent victory in any way. I mean, I think the number of challenges, I mean, this is all in the context of, of course, in the wake of Dobbs, huge policy changes. More than a dozen states enact near abortion bans. Other states enact 6-week, 12-week restrictions, which would not have been allowed under the standard set by Roe. And so the whole policy environment is dramatically different and constricted. And yet, in these articles you've probably seen and others have probably seen, in the years since Dobbs, and we are now, next month is the 4-year anniversary of this decision, we have not seen a reduction in abortions in the United States. And that is extremely frustrating to those who worked so hard to get that case to the Supreme Court and to have the Supreme Court overturn Roe versus Wade. And of course, a main reason, or a big reason why, is because abortion medication has become more popular, more accepted. People, and you know, close to 70% of abortions now are from medication abortion. And it, and under the Biden administration, during the pandemic, the FDA did make that ruling that you don't even need to actually see a doctor; you can get prescribed this medication through telehealth. So, as a result, we have not seen these very restrictive laws result in fewer abortions. And so now these states that have banned abortion, they are not going to stop. They are very committed to finding other ways to stop abortions from taking place.
You make this, you made this point about nobody really wanting to talk about this within the Republican Party, and especially the president. There was an article yesterday in the New York Times. The headline was "Abortion Pill Lawsuit Leaves Trump Silent in a Political Bind." And the first paragraph of that: with the midterm elections less than 6 months away, Republicans are facing challenging political headwinds, including an unpopular war, escalating inflation, and President Trump's sinking approval ratings. Now, another issue is putting the administration in a political bind, and that is abortion. Will we then now be talking about it more? Do you think that this will be part of the conversation? And don't laugh at me when I say this, but the Democratic calculus to try to bring power back to the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, I will say, Donald Trump is not interested in talking about the issue of abortion. I would say for many Republicans in conservative states and southern states, they are talking about it. It's a passionate issue for them, and they're committed to like moving forward on this. So I do think that, you know, lawsuits could be bubbling up. State laws could be passed that get challenged in the courts. And so whether Donald Trump wants it or not, I think that the potential for issues relating to abortion to make their way into national headlines are very there. I mean, there's states that are committed to, you know, restricting, passing laws to make it a crime to cross state lines to get an abortion. They want the federal government to start enforcing the Comstock Act, which would make it illegal to ship abortion medication across state lines. So I do think issues are going to keep coming up that sort of force this issue into the headlines. I also think this issue, it's sort of like a it, like I said, it's not on the front pages, but or the top of the headlines, or, you know, but this is an issue that Americans think about a lot. And I think it's playing a bigger role in people's, the way they're approaching the political their political choices and the political sphere more than you would get the impression just following the news. I mean, the statistics do show that about 1 in 4 women will have an abortion over her lifetime. We looked at all sorts of polls, every national survey we could get our hands on, and we conducted 2 of our own original polls for this surveys for this book. And what we found is majority of Americans, both men and women, will say they know somebody quite well who has had an abortion. And so that's over 50% of men and women say that. And then on top of that, it's something surveys show that people think about a lot, because people think about, do I want to have kids? Do I not want to have kids? So access to abortion is something that people spend a lot of time thinking about. It's just, it's a very personal issue, but it's an important issue. And so I do think that it's something that Americans are going to be eager to be thinking about as they go to vote. Now, it's curious to me how much Democrats are going to talk about this issue. It seems like, and like, I'm not advocate, like, this book is not about saying the policy should be one way or another or advocating for Democrats or Republicans. It's really just charting how public opinion has changed and how that in turn has changed the political landscape. And clearly it has shifted the political landscape around the issue of abortion in ways that advantage Democrats. So if, you know, it seems to me it would be a great issue for Democrats to emphasize, but I'm not sure that that's what's going to happen. I did hear an interview this week, and I'm sure many of your listeners, it was with the Democrat running for, you know his name, Graham Platner, right?
Yeah.
Running for probably the presumable Democratic nominee for Maine. And interestingly, he brought it up as one of the first issues. He was talking about Susan Collins, his Republican challenger, and pointing out how she says that she's pro-choice, but she, in fact, played a key role in confirming some of the justices that then overturned Roe versus Wade. And so he really came out of the gate saying that is an important reason why I'm running. And I was sort of struck by that because I have not heard a lot of other Democrats talking about this issue a lot.
I was struck in this article I mentioned earlier that came out yesterday that says, for all the back and forth, President Trump, who calls himself the most pro-life president in history, stayed mum. His Justice Department, whose job it is to defend the FDA in the case, declined to submit a brief to the Supreme Court, a highly unusual decision. And that gives you an idea of the playing field.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's, this review is ongoing of the, you know, even though there's been all these studies of mifepristone being very safe, the FDA is saying once again they're reviewing it another time. And so, you know, this is, we'll see the outcome of that review, which I think in that same article it might have said actually hasn't even started yet.
Right.
But, you know, it's just sort of trying to push this issue, you know, further down the road. But I don't know that that's, you know, like I said, there's lots of movement happening on the state level that might prevent that.
This is a question that asked you to sort of, you know, look into a crystal ball. And I'm just curious of how you think, looking, knowing the numbers and understanding. So I said earlier that change brought change in public view. If it were to change again and change back, mm-hmm. would that then reverse and we would see the arrow that is shooting up here on the cover of the book going back down?
Yeah, I think yes. I mean, one of the major theories of public opinion that we talk about and use as a framework in the book is the thermostatic theory of public opinion, which is, I mean, it's just basically that public opinion often moves in opposite direction of policy. So if the government starts spending a lot on defense, then Americans say, we want you to spend less on defense. And so, yeah, I mean, when the Dobbs decision came down and the policy environment became so much more conservative and constrictive, public opinion moved in the opposite direction. Now, if the protections of Dobbs or even more, I mean, if the protections of Roe were reinstated, if there was some kind of constitutional access to abortion was reinstated and maybe even stronger than Dobbs than Roe did, then I do think you might see public opinion move back. But I don't think that's likely to happen. I think more likely is that you're going to have states continually passing conservative, more and more conservative policies to try to restrict abortion. And these are going to come through the legal system. They're going to become by challenging the FDA. So I do think the policy environment is going to, in many states, is going to keep moving in a conservative direction. And I think that's going to keep sort of the leftward momentum going. And that's our basis for arguing that it's not going back.
The name of the book, Not Going Back, Public Opinion on Abortion in Post-Dobbs America. It is published by Temple University Press, and co-author Laurel Elder, our guest this morning. Thank you so much for the conversation, for being so wonderful, not only on the panel, but for in this issue and the great work you do.
Thank you so much for having me. It was
Thank
a real
you.
Pleasure.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.